Hello, listeners. This is producer John. Open Pike Night is going to be at Trek Long Island 2024. From May 31st to June 2nd, Cameron and myself, producer John, will be in the Big Apple living long and prospering. We'll be hosting a panel. We'll be giving out stickers. We will have our microphones. Be sure to follow Open Pike on social media and subscribe to openpike.substack.com because we also will be giving away some Trek Long Island weekend passes. Trek Long Island is May 31st to June 2nd at the Hyatt Regency in Hopog, New York. Is this thing on? Hello, hello.
Welcome to Open Pike Night. I'm your host this week, Jesse Bailey, and of course I am here with Cameron Greenshirt Harrison, who is watching TNG for the very first time. Cameron, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, and this, although I have seen much TOS in my past, I had not seen this one, so I was excited to check it out. It was super fun, and I'm excited to watch it tonight with you all.
And producer John this week is away making toys for all the good girls and boys, so he will not be joining us. But he is here in spirit, and he knows whether you've been naughty or nice, so please behave. Now, of course, Cameron was referring to our Stream of Thought series, where we bring on Star Trek professionals and we watch some Star Trek with them, or, you know, whatever it was that inspired one of their more recent episodes. You may remember we sat down with Davey Perez to watch Star Trek VI, and he told us all about how that had some influence over Under the Cloak of War. This week, we are very excited to welcome back Onitra Johnson, and we are going to be watching TOS's The Devil in the Dark. Onitra, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very much ready for Christmas to be over in a good way.
Yeah, I heard that.
It's a lot of buildup.
The end of the year is always like this. But otherwise, I'm really great. We're back at work. Strike's over. Everything's gearing up really quickly and just excited to see what next year brings.
That was going to be one of our first questions to confirm you are back for season three then?
Oh, yes.
Back. Exciting.
Yep.
Very cool. Now, if you want to watch along at home or listen along, if you're here for the audio version of this show, again, we are watching The Devil in the Dark, which is TOS season one, episode 25. Now, if you're here with us live, you don't need to watch along because we've got you covered for that. Cameron, is there anything else we need to get to before we jump in?
I don't think so. Well, Anitra, I was wondering, you know, you wrote Lost in Translation, which this episode inspired, you said. How were you tasked with Lost in Translation? Was that an episode you fought for? Like, how did you come to write on that one specifically?
This one I was tasked with. I didn't fight for it, but it was really great. Anything with Uhura is always wonderful. So I was very excited to jump in.
All right. Okay.
I think season two, I didn't actually have an episode that I was just like, I got to write that one. Season three is a little different.
Oh, okay.
But the one thing I did fight for season two was like, can we see Hemmer again?
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Even if he was terrifying, we are glad to see Hemmer again.
Oh, yeah. I was going to bring my... I forgot when we were watching it, I texted the guys like right when we saw Zombie Hemmer, so during the intro credits. I think, was it just a bunch of explodey head emojis I texted you guys?
Or? Oh, yeah. We were very excited for Cameron to see that episode because he is a big horror movie fan, and we're like, man, this is about as close as you're gonna get with Star Trek. So,
oh yeah,
yes. I don't know if I said this during the last time we all met, but I am such a scaredy cat. But I think that's maybe what helps me, right? I'm terrified.
Maybe you gave us some pretty freaky scenes in that episode. Yeah,
they do say to write what you know. So if you know how to be scared. I feel like that really fits.
Very true.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into TOS's The Devil in the Dark.
Shall we give him a countdown for those listening along?
Yes. So if you're listening along at home to the audio version of this, we are going to say 3, 2, 1, play, and that will be right on the first frame of this episode because, as you may have noticed, this episode does not start with credits or a shot of the Enterprise. It's just a cold open on a planet somewhere.
I love it.
Let's take it away. 3, 2, 1, play.
Yeah, jump right in with this one. Wow.
And we were kind of wondering...
there he is. I didn't even see him the first time.
Yeah. Is the cold open something that is mandated for Strange New Worlds? Like, is it part of the structure, or does the writer get to pick whether or not the episode has a cold open?
It's part of the structure, actually. And it's funny, I never really thought about it. I love a good cold open. But we design it that way so that the audience knows whose episode it is, which is why we also open with the captain's log. And so it just kind of becomes part of the formula for the show. Especially because we have such a big cast.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is so... I mean, I don't know if it's an older TV thing, but like to start a scene that doesn't feature any of the main characters... Like, I was really impressed with this. It really puts you in the world of Star Trek rather than, you know, on the bridge where you're familiar with. Yeah. And I think it helps with that sense of unease, right? Everyone in this episode at this mining facility is just terrified from the beginning.
And Go ahead. No, I was going to say, it also really reminds you that they are in space and there are other people in space. There's other colonies. It's not just we're on the Enterprise, but everyone is affected by what's going on. Everyone can meet an alien that's killing them while they're trying to work. And that's what I really enjoy about this episode.
I also got to say, Schmitter is such an unfortunate name.
Seriously?
Poor Schmitter.
Why, Mom? Why?
I really love that it's just like, you know, use whatever accent you have. It's okay to sound like you're from Boston here.
Oh, no.
And a little bit of subversion here. He's not in a red shirt. He's in an orange jumpsuit.
My favorite in a horror is always when they're like, you're going to be fine. Oh,
yeah. I know. They're like, 4 hours, you'll be fine. They weren't away like 4 seconds and the alien showed up.
Yeah. Somebody can be here in 3 minutes. Now, granted, it's going to take you 4 seconds to die, but, you know.
We're not even going to make it out of the cave. You're going to die. This alien's not playing.
So you said this episode inspired Lost in Translation. Was it like you were assigned the episode and then you were like, I should go check out that TOS episode? Or did it actually inspire the genesis of Lost in Translation during the pitches?
Well, during the pitches, it definitely did because David Reed, who I wrote the episode with, is a huge Trekkie. And I watched all these episodes before I became the writer assistant. Like, you know, I should probably watch every TOS episode. And this one was... one of the ones that really stuck out to me, one of my favorites. Again, the opening. It's just the music.
Oh, so good.
It's so good. And then the close-ups. Oh, just like the other one. So it was in the back of my mind when we were writing Lost in Translation. We just more Lost Translation stayed on the Enterprise, but it's still figuring out what the core, the someone can die, is more with the Uhura. If that makes sense. But I know that this episode was on the back of every writer's mind as we're pitching the story and building the pieces. Okay.
I really, just the pacing of this is, for the 60s, this has got to be considered breakneck pacing, right? Like, the story starts right away and then we get a beam down. And I got to ask Cameron... do you remember where we recently heard about Pergeum?
Pergeum? I don't. I can't.
It was in the Lower Decks Caves episode.
Oh, I mean, I was definitely thinking of that episode while watching this for sure.
Yeah.
And it's funny because we just had a TNG and a DS9 Caves episode over on my podcast.
Caves is a theme for the podcast this week. Caves is a good one.
The caves in this are really good. Mm-hmm. The set design in this is amazing. The models, too.
Yeah.
I love these. The map.
Dude, the map that scrolls out of the wall.
It's just blue masking tape on it.
Yeah. But that's how you could tell it was the future, right?
Yes.
They store their things in the walls.
Wall, yeah. I always think about how our show currently will look 10 years from now. And, if folks will be laughing about our graphics and stuff. I was just rewatching The Matrix, and when he took out the phone from the envelope, he opened it. It's the same thing when watching this. You're just kind of looking at the background and like the map in the back behind Spock, and it's not a lot of blinking lights.
Pretty minimalist here on the moon.
He's got a nice pink outfit.
I was just gonna say that I'm loving the color here, which I believe was because RCA was instrumental in the creation of the show, and they were making color TVs for the first time.
Oh. That makes sense, yeah.
I also love the sassiness of Spock. You mean you shot at it?
I love sassy Spock.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get to the button on this episode, but that's classic TOS. Yeah. So obviously we've got, the is it alive, is it not? Oh, we're accidentally harming it and everything. Did you manage to weave in any deliberate references to this, or was it just kind of thematic inspiration?
It was more thematic. Because I know as I was writing, I was more focused on Uhura's emotional journey, because within Lost in Translation, she's really coming to terms with what it means to be a Starfleet officer and the loss that she had. I thought it was a really good idea, and everyone agreed, to wrap up. It's not just him or died and then everyone moves on. And you see that so often. And she also, we mentioned in season one, her parents passed and her brother, she's dealing with all these things and having it being dealt with while figuring out what this alien species is really beautiful, So.
Yeah, they're just kind of sending an SOS to her brain, but it's bringing up all this trauma that she hasn't really dealt with, and it's a really good weaving of those two stories.
Yeah, and I really love that Kirk is the one that helps her get through it. One thing that was brought up in the room a lot is that Kirk does not believe in dying. He doesn't believe in death. He went through. Yeah, and so he was the doesn't perfect. Believe- yes.
Doesn't believe in the no-win situation or scenario.
Yes, exactly. And so he's the perfect person to go through this journey with Uhura.
I think this episode in particular is a great example of how empathetic Kirk really is as a character, because a lot of people, they think back on Kirk, he's a ladies' man, he's shoot first, ask questions later, but he really actually isn't that way.
Right.
He's incredibly intelligent, and this entire episode, his whole thing is, I am trying to save the lives of people. Yeah. I'm not here to kill a monster. Yeah. I'm here to save this facility because it will affect so many people.
Both he and Spock have a turn halfway through that I'm interested to hear Onitra's take on as a writer. Yeah. I think it's one of the most interesting parts of the episode.
Jen in the chat, uh-oh, somebody's about to die.
Oh no.
I mean, these effects, yes, the actual monster is a little lumpy, okay?
Oh, you mean Pizza the Hut?
But
I love it though.
But it's the steaming, the trails of steam and the recently cut shapes, I mean, it's good effects. And this, I can't tell, is that a matte painting behind them in the window?
It's good, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The refinery, because they pan by it at one point, I think, so I think it's a model.
Yeah, and that was that's one of the opening shots as well.
Back to your stations. Look at that.
But yeah, Lost in Translation is kind of like what Strange New Worlds does best, is like take a classic TOS episode premise and then be like, but you know, what if we actually examine the characters? Like with this one, it would be this episode if it had spurned McCoy dealing with his dad's death, which we don't learn about till right Star Trek V. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just kind of adding that juice to it.
Yeah, I think what's really great about our show right now too is that we have quite a few writers that are huge Trekkies. So a lot of this is done without it even being said, sure. Which is, it's great because those of us who aren't like encyclopedia of Trekkies, we can still follow and go, okay, cool. How does this fit into where the characters are in there? Who's better in this story? You know? And so I think all of us pulling our brain powers together just makes it work really well. Because the hope is, go ahead. Sorry.
No, please go.
Oh no, I was going to say the hope is to get people who know Trek and those who don't know Trek to be able to come in and enjoy the show.
I think, yeah, Strange New Worlds does that exceptionally.
Yeah.
How much fun was it to write for Pellia?
Oh, so much fun. I love Pellia. She's such a great character.
Her saying, like, she just said that about him or because he was dead is just one of the best lines of season two.
I love the we call it the B story with her, with Pellia and Una. It's just like my favorite. There's so many funny scenes that didn't make it to the actual episode because of course we always have more, and oh my gosh, Rebecca's so funny.
I just watched the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray last night, and yeah, the scene with them in the hallway where they're just like staring at each other is so good. That was one of the scenes where I was like, I know pacing and everything, but this would have been nice to leave in.
I know it's hard when you're editing, you're just like, oh, this is so good, we gotta cut this. We just have such great actors.
Gotta kill those babies.
Yeah.
And they have kind of a similar dynamic between them, Dupelia and Una, as Spock and McCoy, where, you know, Spock is like, well, maybe this. And McCoy's like, that's not possible, flat out. Like, that's not something that we can do. And it's not that they're fighting each other. It's just that they disagree, right? It's like a low-level disagreement in basic philosophy that drives some of that character drama. And Strange New
Classic
Worlds
meme shot
really thrives on that.
Yeah, it does. And Pellia's just, I mean, she's someone who's lived so long and has been all their instructors. And so it's just really great. It was a great dynamic.
She's always exasperated.
Now, Jesse, what's the TNG episode with the silicon-based life?
Ooh.
Home Soil? Is that it?
That might
be the ugly
be
bags
it.
Of mostly water.
Oh,
was
man.
Was that one brought up much, Anitra, or was it primarily Devil in the Dark?
Honestly, neither were brought. It's funny because I don't believe Devil in the Dark was actually stated in the room. I just remember watching it, and I was when they actually were pitching, I was like, oh, okay, it's like this episode.
Gotcha.
So I don't believe, but then again, it could have been, and it's been a long time since we constructed this episode, and I have terrible memory, so sorry.
No, yeah. It was, what, 2 years ago at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a bit of a running joke here. We call it the Strange New Worlds promote your season in the same year that you shot it challenge level impossible.
I wish.
But we're very grateful that now we have something to throw in the face of all those Trekkies that are like, you don't know what it was like to wait 3 whole months to find out what happened in Best of Both Worlds. It's like, yeah, we're going to be waiting like a year and a half to get the resolution to hegemony.
Yes. So take that.
First appearance of the creature. Do they tie in?
Spock's holding an egg.
Yes, he is.
I don't know.
Jen had mentioned that she would really like to own one of the matte paintings from this series. I would love to have one of these silicon nodules. Like,
heck yeah.
Super basic prop, right? But, I mean, it fits well because it kind of looks like an egg, and you don't really pick up on that until they start talking about it later, and you go, how did I miss this?
Right.
I wasn't sure why Pizza the Hut stole the device and didn't just eat it like it does everything else, but...
Well, I think it's actually a really cool parallel to Lost in Translation because it shows intelligence on the part of this thing that they assume is a mindless monster, right?
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
Now here's the crew that's going to get killed.
They're all wearing red shirts.
You got like five of them in one spot. Mark, I see dead people.
Yeah, start taking bets on how many die. He says at one point, like, they have 100 men down there. Isn't, like, the crew of the Enterprise only, like, 2-something, 200-some?
I think two or three at this point. It's definitely not the 1,000 that it is of TNG.
The number of the crew on the Enterprise?
You know what? I don't know, but yes. It's a really big ship. I really enjoy the red shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Even, Star Trek is, a lot of people are like, it's such a cheap show. And I'm like, it really is not that cheap looking. Like, these are great costumes even now. I mean, this transfer, I think this is an HD upscale, but it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Well, again, the set, yeah.
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 I mean, I know. Caves are cheap to make, but still, they put some time into this one. Mm-hmm.
Does everybody have their phasers ready, just in case?
I don't have a phaser. I need to get one.
I've got a Beverly Crusher. That's what I have.
Hey, there you go. Nice. When these phasers, when I saw these phasers on the shelf at Target, I walked up to my wife like a little kid, like, I have to ask now. And she just... She bowed her head and went, just buy it.
Nice.
Puka in the chat says 435 under Kirk. So, yeah, maybe 100 red shirts that they could bring down. That sounds about right. And then 250 under Pike.
And this monster has killed 50 people when this episode starts? Like,
yeah, apparently.
It seems like you would call for help way before you get to 50 deaths at your facility, I think.
Well, maybe they're just far away. I don't know.
That's true. This is definitely the era of, well, this is the only ship in the entire sector, despite us having a fleet.
So this episode has some amazing Kirk and Spock scenes. Sadly, no Uhura, but Anitra, Lost in Translation is the iconic meeting of some of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
What was the responsibility there?
All fun. It was great to really bring together all these characters in the... I actually just remember the shooting that scene more so than writing it. Writing it was a lot of fun because we had that running joke with Spock not liking Sam Kirk's messiness.
Yeah.
So it was like the perfect opportunity. And then the running joke of the cookie. But it was just such a iconic, special moment, especially considering like everything that just happened. Like they're relaxing, they're becoming friends, and they're meeting each other for the first time. And it's not a big moment, but for those of us who know Trek, it's a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the episode, it's not like we're bells and whistles. They're just meeting at the bar and come join us. And it was fun to write and great to film. And I loved it. And I'm really glad I was one of the ones who got to write that one. So,
yeah. Was there a lot of discussion about it in the room? Was there a lot of debate about getting that scene just right? Or
no,
I kind of just leave it up to you.
If I can remember correctly, there was a lot of excitement, so there wasn't much pushback. And then everyone's just like, yes, this has to happen. And then we just kind of ran with it. We just ran with it. There wasn't much pushback. It just kind of flowed,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to overthink it too much, because then you're going to like... overproduce it and it's going to be this whole thing, and it is nice that it's just like a meeting at a bar, like you said.
Yeah, it's meant to be a light moment, with War being that glue, because she introduces them, and yeah, so it was just really, really good moment.
Facilitates the communication.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And a great thematic connection to Uhura's moments in 209. Mm-hmm. That's what she does. She keeps people connected. And mm-hmm. for her to get that moment of introducing those two is huge. Mm-hmm. Ethan Peck mentions in the season 2 Blu-ray special features mm-hmm. that everyone on set for that scene was aware of the gravity of it, mm-hmm. but tried not to play it heavy. They, yeah. you know, because moments in life that end up being momentous later don't always feel that way when they happen. You never know what the repercussions will be.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened on set. Everyone was, you know, this all together, all our actors really understanding how important the scene was, but exactly what Ethan said on the Blu-ray, they played it. And it was the same thing in the writing as well. It's an important moment, but a light moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a community of Trekkies on, I'm just going to call it Twitter because that's what it is, who watch TOS together on Saturday nights, and they all tweet along. And I was reading, apparently William Shatner finds out during the filming of this episode that his father has died. And you will see some shots where it's very clearly William Shatner's stunt double, only shot from behind, mm-hmm. while Shatner wasn't available for set.
Mm. I was going to say, and, you know, I don't know when the shots were, but he has a lot of just close-up reactions with no lines that are really great in this episode. Like, Shatner can deliver a facial reaction.
Yeah, like, you know, his acting is a joke in some parts of the world, but, like, he delivers, and he is very talented. And this mm-hmm. show, I mean, you can really see how his career grew out of this, because the man can command a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So here's the ethical debate mm-hmm. beginning. Of course, one of my favorite parts of Lost in Translation is just, you know, how quickly Pike is like, all right, we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Like, we trust each other so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's his style of captaining. and I think that's really important with Trek across the board, is establishing how each captain commands differently.
Kirk receives his meals, Pike cooks the meals and hands them out.
Let's see, does Pike eat anything in Lost in Translation? I don't think so.
No, he missed out on the cookies.
Yeah, there is another running joke we have that no matter what Pike cooks, we never get to see him eat it. Like, he makes a lot of really great meals, but as soon as he lifts the fork, something happens.
Classic parent. Yeah. Classic parent.
Oh, that's
yourself
great.
At all times. Commander Giotto, disperse your search parties.
Aye, aye, sir. Lewis, Vincey, take your men out.
Mr. Spock?
Love how Spock just slips in the
plan B. I don't recall giving any such order.
Yeah.
You did not, sir. I merely thought that if the opportunity arose...
I will lose no more men.
This conflict between Kirk and Spock, it works so well because Spock isn't, you know, fighting with him, like I was saying earlier. It's just that they have this disagreement about how to proceed mm-hmm. and, you know, what is the right thing to do here, because mm-hmm. all life is sacred, especially mm-hmm. to Vulcans. And it's not that Kirk doesn't agree with that. It's that he throws back at him. Yeah. This is a needs of the many thing, man. Mm-hmm. Like we got a lot of people that rely on this per diem. And if there's one thing that we can kill to make sure that those people still get this, then that's what we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I love how they turned the scene comedic at the end, too.
2,228.7.
Computer Spock will always be something I love when he gives precise odds.
Pretty good odds.
Although, like, Spock, if you and him are together, those odds aren't the same. Like, you're calculating odds if you're split up, but then you two just stick together the entire time.
It is cool to see Kirk use Spock's own logic sort of against him to keep him here. And you get this moment of friendship, right? Like, hey, I think you should stay here. And he's like, don't worry, babe. I'm not going anywhere.
But yeah, it's interesting that he won't order him to stay. He won't tell him, like, I think you might not kill the creature if we see it. Which is ironic, because in three scenes, Spock's going to want to kill the creature, and Kirk's not.
This facility operator going, we're going to use clubs to attack this creature. It's like, yeah, the energy weapons don't work, but let's get sticks. Come on, man.
Hey, it's a foreman who is, like, committed to the safety of the men under him. Got to respect that.
Yeah. And Checkpoint Tiger is a great name for a checkpoint. The guy in the pink that actually, that we know that he can hit this thing because he shot it once, they actually give him a club.
Well, he tried. He had his chance with the phaser. Didn't work.
We're going to give somebody else a chance.
Captain, we are being watched. Are you sure? Intuition?
I have to ask, Onitra, is there a conscious effort to not overuse the Vulcan mind meld in Strange New Worlds? Because, I mean, TOS has a lot of mind melds in it.
Yes, there. Yes, we keep track of how many mind melds. Try not to overdo it.
Is there a limit per season, or is it just like, hey, if you can find something else, use something else?
Yeah, there's not a limit per season. I think just we want to stretch ourselves as storytellers, not always just go to mind melds. Yeah. There should be other ways to solve problems, so that's what we try to do as much as possible.
Listeners, anytime you hear us get quiet, we're just enraptured by what's on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, looking at the pavement floor of this cave. Concrete floor.
Yeah, they dig down, they lay down a floor, and then they dig down another level.
Ah, that makes sense. My back hurts just watching them crouch.
Seriously, walking in a constant crouch everywhere.
So when you write, crewman, I forget who he is blasted through the nacelle and freezes outside the Enterprise and the void of space. Like, do you write all of that? Like, how detailed do you get into those types of sequences?
Not too detailed, because you want to save space on the page.
Got to keep that word count, page count down.
Yes. And then it gets in the hand of the director, and then everyone plans it out, the DP. So just the basic movements, depending on, like, I'm someone who will overwrite if I'm left to my own devices. but yeah, the scene was maybe 2-3 sentences. That.
So you didn't have to research exactly how one would freeze to death in space to write it.
Oh, no, they actually, we did. There was a lot of discussion about how one would, I think even Dr. Aaron gave us some notes. So, it was really good. Yeah, there was a lot of talk. It just didn't go into the script, like all the.
Did you guys notice in the last scene, as soon as Kirk is in danger, Spock does not say Captain Kirk. He says Jim. Mm.
That's not quite as easily as you and I walk through air, Spock, but I see your point. Gotta love a dramatic dolly. Also notice Mama Pizza the Hut just knocked some of her eggs aside as she came through.
She moved aside. Yes, Mark, it is the prototype.
Prototype for Jim Henson Workshop, Mark says, yeah.
I wonder, clearly there's an actor in this monster outfit.
No!
I wonder how direction works for that. Like, are they telling him, okay, back up, okay, move forward, okay, back up, or did they just rehearse, or is, you know, there's probably marks on the floor, but we see a lot of the floor here, so I wonder if it's purely rehearsed or if it's just direction that they cut from the audio.
Well, I hear the actor actually went and lived for 2 weeks with some rocks and boulders to really get into the mind.
He's method.
He's a method actor. Like, you know what?
Method rock creature.
I'm going to eat all this pizza, hug this rock.
So this is my favorite turn. The second Kirk is in danger is when Spock is like, oh, you got to kill it.
Yeah.
Kill that thing. All the red shirts can die trying to preserve it, sure. But Jim, not you.
10 feet away from me.
Kill it, Captain. Quickly.
It's not making any threatening moves, Spock.
You don't dare take the chance, Captain. Kill it.
I thought you were the one that wanted kept alive. Captured, if possible.
Jim, your life is in danger.
So, yeah, Uhura's different visions throughout Lost in Translation. Like, how did you come up with those? Were there any other kind of horror sequences that were left on the cutting room floor, or the writer's room floor?
Say that one more time. I'm sorry. I was really into that.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, you're okay.
Yeah, all of Uhura's horror visions and visions throughout Lost in Translation, they start with like kind of more horror and then lead into her flashbacks to her family. But, you know, we've got zombie Himmer. We've got a very Us scene with her fighting herself. Yeah, were there any other ones that didn't make it onto the page or the final draft?
Not that I can remember, because each scene was crafted so that it could tell a story of what the aliens are trying to say to her, which we see when she's talking to Sam Kirk. So I can't think of any that were left on the cutting room floor. No, I can't think of any.
Okay.
Again, I say my memory's terrible, so I'm sorry, everybody.
No.
I think my favorite is the one where she is duplicated. And there's herself behind herself with that Kubrick stare and that knife. Oh, it's just, oh my gosh, that was intense.
Yeah.
And the cut to her punching Kirk, it's all, that's a really good scene. I love a Himmer, a zombie Himmer, but yeah, that was a really effective scene.
It was really great. It's like, I wasn't hitting on you. Such a good scene.
Does this monster make anybody else want nachos? Is that just me? Like, this monster looks kind of delicious.
Like food, yes.
Yeah.
It's made no moves against you.
Oh, seems to be waiting. I tried talking to it, but it didn't do any good.
And then we get the reveal of the silicon nodules. Or maybe they're noticing that these are probably connected to the creature.
You know, that was my pet name for my kids when they were babies, too. Oh, my little silicon nodule. You little nodule.
You're so round.
Actually, okay, so yeah. Cute, weird, random cute names we call our kids. My kids, Pineapple and Coconut, for some reason, was what we called them.
I have so many names for my daughter.
I know how it is. That's nice. Not just coconut and pineapple, but those are the ones I'm remembering right now.
My nicknames always come up depending on what mood I'm in and what's happening.
The ones that my wife and I tend to stick to is the chunk, because when she was born, you know, she had all those extra baby rolls, and it was like, you're just this little chunk of mommy, and Chunk just stuck.
But have you ever dressed her up like Chunk from the Goonies yet?
That's a good question. You know what?
Not to disappoint you, Cameron, I don't know that I've actually seen the Goonies.
Well, what? Now we've got another live stream opportunity.
I was very young when that came out, if I was born yet.
Still, you're not that far off.
I'll put it on the list.
Throw Gremlins on there while you're at it, if you haven't seen Gremlins.
Gremlins, oh, yeah, well, I'm nearly certain I've seen. It has just been probably 20 plus years, but yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Goonies is great.
I really like that Spock kind of explains the mind meld. Like, mm-hmm. you know, having TOS be such an episodic show, like, we've seen 50 mind melds up to this point, but a new viewer may not have seen a mind meld, so he explains it to Kirk, you know? Remember mm-hmm. how we can join two minds?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What? Oh. No kill. It writes. Oh, is that an exclamation point at the bottom?
No kill I.
Oh, I. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Nimoy puts in some fine performance here when he's doing the mind meld.
And again, a great effect. Like, they got mm-hmm. only the letters to smoke. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm continuously impressed by that.
Jen asks, how did it learn English? It's a good question.
That's Spock, what it was doing. I suppose,
but you think
it
would be Vulcan. It would write in Vulcan.
It's a much more complicated script.
Yeah, it just went with the easy English.
But yeah, that's what it was doing when they thought it was just sitting there waiting. It was actually listening and learning. And it may have learned from Spock's mind, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good question, though, Jen. Is Spock actually speaking Vulcan and the Universal Translator is always making it English? He does seem like the kind of guy that would speak English for the benefit of the lesser life forms around him, though.
It's more logical to do it that way, just in case the Universal Translator breaks down.
Yeah. I like that the administrator's like, what happened? And he's like, don't ask, just come down here.
So I have to ask, do you have the whole backstory written down somewhere of what happened to Uhura's parents with the shuttle? Like, why is it Sydney that it crashed in? No, just like the background?
Yeah, it's just in all of our... That's the one thing I do have a good memory for, is characters. And where, you know, like, I remember Minka has a wife, and Pike's father was religious, and those little details. Mm-hmm. I believe all the writers keep in their head, but it's not something we have written anywhere. Mm-hmm. And someone will bring it up. You know, it's like, where's this character at? And so, yeah.
Okay.
I know on some of the older Star Trek shows, I don't know about TOS, but I know TNG and Voyager, for example, had what's called a show Bible, where it's, you know, all of just the super basic details on characters. Does Strange New Worlds have one of those?
No, not that I'm aware of. That's a good question. We do one pagers at the top of each season, just kind of explaining where everyone's at and what we're going to do differently this season. But we don't necessarily have a Bible.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Just a Kiva's head.
Yeah.
And Henry's.
Yeah.
Pretty rude of that security officer to just say these guys are all ugly.
You're right. Titular devils. It is incredible that the Vulcan mind meld will work with a silicon-based life form. Mm-hmm.
That, and I wonder if that's part of the resistance to overusing it in Strange New Worlds, is it's arguably a little bit magic, or it feels like magic, right, to the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Vulcan mysticism.
Yeah. We all love space magic, but...
Yeah. I like that Spock really... established early on that it's not just knowledge transference, it's an emotional transference. And that really plays into the Sarek episode in TNG when Picard is so emotionally affected by Sarek.
Mm-hmm. When I was watching this the other day, I was like, this is pretty good, but needs more McCoy. And he did not disappoint when he showed up. McCoy is fantastic in this episode.
Yeah.
I don't see any paint peeling off of that thing.
McCoy is like skeptical of things he can actually see. Like, he's a true skeptic. Like, yeah, it's happening in front of me, but I still don't know if I believe it.
Virtually. Yay.
Hey, Mark got there first. Good job, Mark.
McCoy just gave his classic, mm-hmm. I'm a doctor, not a, in this case, bricklayer. Now, when you're writing with someone else, I think you kind of explained it last time, but you kind of break apart the scenes. You hand out the different scenes. So you would do some, and was it Reed on this episode, you mm-hmm. said?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, depending on who you're writing with, you discuss between the two of you who wants to take which act and then go from there.
Okay, so it's by act, kind of.
Mm-hmm. And you can break it up anyway. You could do teaser, act one and two. You can do teaser, act two and four. Like you can, it just all depends.
Chamber of the Ages sounds like a Legend of Zelda game.
It does.
Or like an 80s hair band album.
Oh man, now I want that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I just think, like, yeah, 80s album, like, yeah, heavy metal album cover artwork as a genre for Strange New World season 3. That's going to be one of my guesses.
Producer John sent us a note from the North Pole. Apparently, this is the first ever McCoyism.
Oh, wow. Nice. That's exciting.
Search for is there. Go. Go.
Really glad we finally got to see some emotional Spock in season 2 of Strange New Worlds because, yes, obviously he's known for the stoicism and the logic, but TOS Spock has a lot of emotions, and yeah, some of it is because of mind melds, but I mean, like, even in the cage, he's smiling ear to ear when they've passed the ringing flowers, and it really adds some great depth to his character.
Yeah, agreed. And it's great because we're dealing with a Spock before he was the Spock that was well known, and you know, this is his first time on the Enterprise, and it gives you a lot of storytelling room, which is nice.
It makes him really easy to relate to, too, despite being, you know, an alien character, ostensibly.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of his story is relatable. I mean, a dad who he disappoints, a mom who he doesn't quite understand until he does. So it's relatable. Oh,
that scene in Charades where he apologizes to her, I teared up big time. I was like, I should probably call my mom too.
Yes. Hug your mom.
Yeah. Amanda's a great surrogate mother for us all. So when you're writing James T. Kirk, do you go back and watch any of the TOS or the movies to kind of get into his mannerisms or dialogue or?
I personally don't, because we're also dealing with a James before he was captain of the Enterprise. And so it's a good, for me, I feel like it's good to start fresh where he's younger, he's new, he's also kind of finding his place. And he's got this rivalry with his brother that's also relatable and fun. So I don't. But other writers might.
But that confidence that he is known for is definitely still there as his strength.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
I think it serves really well in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a core of people that are just, this, you know, it's going to be there. And I think, I mean, even when you've watched the movies, it's that same, like, fun. But he's still super confident.
Yeah, Mark said to look out for face huggers in the previous egg room, and that's that's a good note.
Oh, pink suit. Open eggs. Pink suit turning on his own team. Come on, man.
Yeah.
This is for Schmitter.
That's right. Oh, shoot. Kirk, serious.
That thing killed 50 men.
It's killed 50 of my men.
And you've killed thousands of her children.
What?
Those round silicon nodules that you've been collecting and destroying? They're her eggs.
But much like Pike, like these guys do, they do a 180 pretty quick. And, you know, that's what's always appreciated about Star Trek is.
Yeah.
We'd all like to think this is how we would react.
Yeah. It always points to the better nature that we're capable of, you know, and it gives you, and specifically like in Lost in Translation, like we'll do whatever we have to strengthen the Federation unless we find out that we're hurting somebody.
Right.
Because that's not what we're about. And it's so cool to see that just work on such an intuitive level for these characters and in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. It's a show to be hopeful, you know, it's not all dark. The world is dark and there's things even in our show that happens, but there's always our crew that pulls through and remembers their humanity or their Vulcanness.
Yeah. Akiva and Henry both used, I think, the term empathy generators and radical empathy as a philosophy. Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, I think that that's both present in TOS and Strange New Worlds, but I think it's also something that you guys have managed to weave into the story without kind of beating people over the head with it, like some kind of pink jumpsuit guy.
We need a club. I would say that next Iron Room. Akiva, we need a club.
These were club moments.
Club moments. Name it empathy. Oh.
Can you imagine Bernadette Croft's take on this pink jumpsuit, you guys? Oh.
It would be so fabulous.
It would be.
So great.
All right. Speaking of, when Bernadette was here, one of my favorite notes she had was they had added in little space worms, space maggots to the Himmer outfit. Did they point those out to you? Did you get to see them?
No.
How excited were you to see Zombie Himmer when they made him up?
I was very excited, and I was really into the makeup. I should have paid more attention.
Apparently there's tiny space maggots in the clothes he was wearing.
The whole entire outfit was just so, I mean, everything was just so amazing. Our team is so great. The crew.
So good.
Yeah. So good.
I love the joy on McCoy's face, even though he's like wrist deep in silicon goo.
He is so pleased with himself.
Cycle. And then stuff.
He's like, I did it.
Did it.
Ship ready to leave orbit, Captain. Course laid in.
And then, yes, the classic TOS button. Which is just always like, maybe not always. The ones I remember are always these three just having a little chuckle moment amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always wonder, like, okay, so there's almost always a yeoman with like a clipboard. Hmm. Is that supposed to represent like, okay, we've made the report on this? Because we never see them make the report. They just go, all right, what's next? And it works because it's episodic, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, there would be so much paperwork after this.
Yeah.
She found humanoid appearance revolting, but she thought she could get used to it. Oh, she did she? Now tell me, did she happen to make any comment about those ears? Not specifically.
Oh, Spock.
He's so sassy. He's like... The Horta thinks humans are disgusting, but she thinks the ears are the best part.
She's highly intelligent with impeccable taste.
Yes.
Because she approved of you.
Detecting my modesty.
Does not bear close examination, Mr. Spark. I suspect you're becoming more and more human all the time.
Oh,
so good.
The humor in TOS is underrated. It honestly is.
It really is.
It's so clever. It's very subtle. And it's true to life. Like, mm-hmm. this is how you give your friends the business, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. you're not swearing at them. You're not insulting mm-hmm. them. You're just, you know, you're kind of poking at them. It just works so well.
Yeah.
Well, that was Devil in the Dark. Yeah. Thank you so much for watching with us, Anitra.
Yes, of course. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, very excited to see what's coming up in season 3. Yeah, I mean, apparently there's some episodes you're really excited for that you fought for, but is there a single one-word tease you can give us for what we might expect in season 3?
Oh, man. No, I kept trying to think of one. Oh, my goodness.
What was your word? What was your season 2 word? Do we remember?
It was charades.
Oh, charades. That's right.
which I got to say, thank you, because yeah. as a show, we were like, holy crap, we got a scoop and we didn't even know it. Like, they named the freaking episode Charades, and we've known that for a year.
But we didn't know it, yeah. but we knew it. That's the best kind.
Season 3 is so big. I'm trying my best to think of one word, and the only one I could think of is love. Mm. Yeah, love.
Love. I'm going to go ahead and steal big also.
Yes.
Big love?
Big and love.
Big and
maybe
love.
Big love. Big love. I don't know.
Awesome.
I love it. All right, folks. Well, I think we're coming up on the end of this second stream of thought. I want to thank all of the patrons who joined us in the chat. Puka, Jen, Mark, Steve. I think you might be in there, or you'll be in there in spirit. Thank you again to producer John for putting in the work, even though you're all the way up at the North Pole. I can't believe how much effort that you continue to put into this show. You really are the piece that holds it all together. So thank you for working your magic. And those of you who are here live, make sure you pay attention in a couple of days when our Christmas special drops, because there is going to be so much Christmas fun in there, and maybe even a little bit of a reading of this Star Trek Christmas book, Trek the Halls.
So, that's news to me, even.
Nice. Yeah, just
but there also
keep your eyes
there'll
open.
There'll also be news of another Christmas stream coming up, so yes, pay attention.
We are very excited to share the holidays with you all. Onitra, thank you again so much for being here.
Yeah, always, anytime. Thank you both.
So much fun with season 3. And yeah, for sure. I'm sure you'll hear from us again at some point in the future after that comes out.
No problem. It's
always
here.
A pleasure.
Always.
And I'll let you know how I feel about the 5th season.
Yes, please. Please do. I'm excited.
But like I said, definitely one of the best prologues I ever read. And there's a map. Jesse can attest. If there's a map in a book, I'm in.
You're in. Awesome. Well, it's great seeing you both. John, I hope you are having fun in the North Pole, and I will see you guys next time.
All right. Bye, Anitra.
Bye.
Have a good one, folks. Once again, thank you so much to Onitra Johnson. An absolute delight every time she stops by the Open Pike Night stage, and we cannot wait to get her back after season 3. It sounds like she's very excited.
I wonder, we didn't ask her if she got the episode she fought for in season 3.
Oh man, that would have been the obvious follow-up.
So I wonder if she got it. It'll be fun to try to figure out which one that was.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I'm hoping we still get screeners for season 3, but that'll be like 2 years since our last screener, so.
Yeah.
Hopefully the season 5 Discovery screeners will give us a clue as to whether or not we are still on that list. But it has been a long night, and we should probably start wrapping this thing up. So Cameron, if folks want to hear more from you, where can they do that?
Yeah, they can mosey on over to Greenshirt, A Newbie's Trek Through TNG, where I'm just started season 7 of TNG for the very first time. I think when this drops, it'll be a week before our season 6 finale with Wendy, editor and producer of Greatest Trek and Greatest Generation, guesting on to talk about that that finale.
Very cool. I remember being at the Pranica Cabanica with Wendy and talking all about editing and things like that, and man, talk about a professional producer. We can say that because John's not here right now, but like, wow. I am very much looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And of course, if you need to get a hold of Open Pike Night on these social media apps, just look up at Open Pike. That will get you to us on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, pretty much you name it. That's where we are, and that's where we are at. And of course, you can go to openpike.com to get everything you need for the show all in one place, including our Patreon, our merch, and you can sign up for our free newsletter there to get a heads up sent directly to your email inbox for free whenever we have a new guest coming up.
I signed up.
Finally. It only took 2 years. Well, as I was saying, it's been a long night, and the Open Pike Night hosts have a lot of work to do. We've got some very cool episodes coming up, and man, they are going to take some serious prep. So make sure you clean up after yourselves. Don't forget to tip your servers. You can go anywhere you want, but you can't stay here.
And look out for the Pizza the Huts.